This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. He's dealt with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the Keystone XL pipeline. He sponsored bills like the Military Reserve Small Business Jobs Act of 2015. Today, we welcome back to Stateside Democratic Senator Gary Peters. Welcome.
Well, it's great to be here with you, Cynthia. And I can look at you as we're doing the interview. And it's always a pleasure to be in Ann Arbor. I got to drop my daughter off here. She goes to school. So she was home for the weekend, so it's all good.
Worked out great. Well, let's start with an issue that I know is very important to you right now, and that's pet coke, petroleum coke. And we remember those huge, huge piles of pet coke lying alongside the Detroit River in southwest Detroit, and that was just 2 years ago. Tell us about the legislation you're proposing.
Well, pet coke has been an issue, as you mentioned. It was a big issue for us here in Detroit, but it's an issue around the country. It's basically the residual when you refine Canadian tar sands oil. In fact, for every barrel of tar sands oil, about one-third of the material is pet coke, so it's a lot. There's an issue right now in Chicago. That's why I'm working with Senator Durbin on this bill. It's an issue there. But as you see Canadian tar sands oil come throughout the United States, you're going to have piles of this stuff. And what we want to do is look at best practices as to how to handle it. We clearly know it was not handled properly in Detroit. We had it blowing into people's homes, into their lungs, into the Great Lakes. So we had that video I'm sure many people saw on TV. It was during the campaign one of the outside groups had, which showed this incredible black cloud of pet coke blowing across the Detroit River, obscuring the Ambassador Bridge. It was so thick, and that was going into people's neighborhoods. And so we need to study the effects of it, look at how we can handle it. And some states require covering it completely. You know, those kinds of things are important, and we're dealing with it around the country.
Well, specifically, what would the bill do?
Well, the bill would have a study to take a look at that and also to look at best practices, and then hopefully we'll be able to then promulgate some regulations to make sure that we don't have the kind of problems that we saw in Detroit and other places. And my understanding is they're having a similar problem in Chicago, which is why Senator Durbin is working on this bill with me.
And here we've been told by the EPA pet coke has low toxicity and it's not a carcinogen. Are you worrying that that kind of information and our safety regulations are all just not stringent enough?
Yeah, they aren't. And in fact, you know, the thing about pet coke too is that it's a particulate matter. And when you are breathing particles into your lungs, that's not a good thing. It causes all sorts of problems. And when you saw that dust cloud on the video that many people saw that Canadian resident took, no one's going to want to breathe that in. That's you know, you can't tell me this is a nerd and is not carcinogenic. It's going into people's lungs. It's an impact. We had folks restaurant. We had some of the wait staff of some of the restaurants down there who are complaining of respiratory issues and coughing and runny noses. It's having an impact on your body, and I think the EPA is starting to realize that particulate matter in people's lungs is never a good thing.
What are your feelings as far as having this bill clear the Senate?
Well, hopefully we'll get it through. It's a study. It's analysis. We're hoping that is less controversial than trying to stop it immediately. But if you get that study and you look at states, I mean, some states are doing it already. This should not be that controversial. You've got states on the Eastern Seaboard, for example, that require it to be covered. If it's good enough for other states who believe that it's important, why not have a national standard to make sure everybody's protected regardless of what state they may happen to live in?
Let's move over to your thoughts on the nuclear deal with Iran. And we know the State Department submitted the agreement to Congress, and the 60-day review period begins today. We've heard Republicans as well as some Democrats express unhappiness with the deal. Where do you stand?
Well, I'm still taking – I'm going to take my time to review it. In fact, I spent some time this weekend. That was some of my weekend reading. Was going through the agreement. I have a number of questions related to it. So we're going to have the opportunity to have some classified briefings as well as other hearings in Congress over the next couple weeks. It's important for us to air all that out, to have the concerns. It's serious. We certainly cannot allow Iran to have a nuclear weapon. It's destabilizing for the Middle East, destabilizing for the world, and we have to have a strong agreement to do that. I have questions that were raised, and I'm going to take my time to do it right because it's going to be one of the most important votes that I will probably ever have to make.
What are some of the questions you're going to ask and look at?
Well, some of it's technical. As I was going through it, and I need to have clarification when we're talking about we're going to allow some kinds of IR centrifuges and not others. I'm not a nuclear physicist or a weapons expert. And so those are kind of the questions. Why are we doing that? There's also concerns I have about the arms embargo that's going to be lifted after 5 years, the ballistic missile embargo after 8 years. And what does it really mean at the end of the 10 or 15-year period? How close will Iran be to the ability to develop a weapon at that time? And, you know, those are very serious questions that I'm going to reserve judgment until I hear answers from both sides of the debate. You got to hear from both sides. The administration will have their point of view, but we certainly need to hear from other experts who have a different point of view.
And we know the president has sent the defense secretary to meet with leaders in Israel and in Jordan and Saudi Arabia, hoping to ease their alarm over this deal. Do you think these nations do have a right to feel that sense of alarm?
Well, certainly they have every right mm-hmm. to be concerned. They're in that part of the world and are directly impacted by what Iran does. Certainly Israel and our strong relationship there, but Saudi Arabia and others. And they obviously have very big concerns. And we have to remember that Iran is just a really bad actor when it comes not just to the nuclear weapon, but they have wreaked havoc throughout the region in providing funding for terrorist organizations that have launched attacks against Israel, launched attacks against other Muslim groups as well. So it is a concern.
And as certainly I know you're very aware, and we've talked often in this program about Amir Hekmati of Flint,
right.
Marine veteran, decorated Marine veteran, who's been in Iranian prison since 2011. Should Hekmati and the other three Americans being detained by Iran, should they have been a part of this deal, do you think?
Well, I know it was part of the discussion. You would think, mm-hmm. though, that if Iran wants to be accepted into the broader world community, they can't be holding folks like they are holding them right now in really what is an illegal fashion. So it certainly questions, again, is Iran really serious about trying to be a member of the world community of civilized countries that treat people under the rule of law, which is not occurring.
Were you disappointed that that wasn't really a key part of the agreement?
Well, you know, it's I'm obviously we'd love to have everything in the agreement if we could. So, but you know, my focus is going to be specifically with the access to the weapons, and are we protecting the Middle East and the world community from a nuclear armed Iran, which is a scary thought.
My guest is U.S. Senator Gary Peters, Democrat from Bloomfield Township. Let's talk now about the Export-Import Bank of the United States, one of those entities that we kind of hear about, but most of us probably don't really know what it is, what it does, and why you're so concerned now that Congress has let the bank's charter expire earlier this month. So would you spell this out for us?
Well, the Export-Import Bank assists companies when they are selling their products overseas and really kind of guarantees and provides some sort of guarantees with those activities that some of the commercial banks simply aren't going to be involved in. It's an entity that most all of the industrial countries have. We compete with the Canadians and Germans and the Japanese and others, the Chinese, that have similar kinds of entities. It's been in existence for 80 years. It's been successful. It has led to tens of thousands of jobs every year. And it doesn't cost the taxpayers any money. That's the thing that is so frustrating about this. It actually makes money while increasing our exports, which is so important in this country, that we already import more than we export. We have a trade imbalance. We've got to help our companies, and particularly smaller companies. And those are the ones that I've visited around the state of Michigan, smaller auto supply companies, for example, who don't have the sophisticated folks involved with exports. And so they go to the export bank to get the kind of help that they need and the guarantees that they need when they're shipping products. I was at a company recently in Grand Rapids that is doing business with Mexico and Canada. And they said, quite frankly, they wouldn't be able to do business with either one of them. And they don't think they will be able to do business if the bank goes away. And that's going to mean jobs in Grand Rapids. And the important thing, again, is that this is an entity that makes money for the taxpayers. It actually reduces the deficit. It doesn't cost the taxpayers any money. And it creates jobs. But unfortunately, you've got a small portion of really ideological people in Congress who just don't think the government should be involved in something like this. And so they're trying to cut the funding for it, even though it does not cost the taxpayers money and it creates jobs and has had a proven record of doing that for decades.
They call it corporate welfare.
Well, they do, but corporate welfare would be if it's costing the taxpayers money and somehow we're subsidizing them. We are not. That is simply not what is happening here. And you're going to put all our companies now at a competitive disadvantage with other countries around the world. And, you know, if it was a perfect world where there were no import-export banks, we don't need one if no one else has one. But when other countries are doing this and are using it successfully and competing against our local companies, and we're going to lose out because of ideology, not because of practical common sense business. You know, I was a businessman for 20 plus years prior to being in public service. I don't look at this job as ideology. Mm-hmm. I look at it as I've got a problem. How do we fix it? How do we make it work? And most importantly, how do we make sure we're creating good-paying jobs here in Michigan and supporting our small manufacturers that need this kind of financing help and guarantee help when they're doing business overseas.
So what's next? Do you think the votes are there to retroactively get that charter going?
Well, I do believe the votes are there if you actually get it on the floor. And the frustration has been we haven't had a vote on the floor to have an up and down. So there's some talk maybe it'll be part of a transportation bill, some other bill that is moving. But I believe that if you actually put it on the floor, you would have bipartisan support. You would have a large number of Republicans, and you'd have a lot of Democrats that would support it as well. So we just need to get a vote, and that should be the way the system works. You know, let it have a vote, whether it goes up or down. That's the way the system's supposed to work, but put it on the floor.
I can tell you're very concerned about this and frustrated.
Yeah, I am. I think it's more concerned in the fact that, this is the arguments do not hold water. And it's ultimately about jobs. And at a time when we've got middle-class incomes, the median income continues to be stagnant and to shrink. One of the drivers for middle-class incomes is manufacturing and the ability to make things. And we do that really well here in Michigan. We know how to make things. But why do you then tie the hands of those manufacturers with some of the financial tools that are necessary to compete in a very competitive global marketplace? Other countries understand that, and they're supporting their manufacturers and supporting jobs. The United States, we need to do that as well, and particularly at a time when we have such a large trade imbalance. Anything we can do to increase American exports overseas to reduce that deficit is a good thing on just about every front.
I want to spend a little time talking about you. We found a recent piece in the Huffington Post by Jennifer Bendery, and the title was, Gary Peters may be the loneliest person in the Senate, but he's doing okay. And it looked what life was like for you at being the only Democrat in the freshman class of 13. They call it the president of the Democratic freshman class of one.
That's right. I'm immediately in leadership.
There you go. What's that been like for you?
Well, it's nice to be in the majority, but... But it's actually, it has not been bad. And I enjoyed seeing that article, and I did laugh. I said, my class can also, I can also say, you can't say this in Washington very often, but my class speaks with one voice. But it's actually also had an opportunity to get to know 12 Republicans well, which is about building bridges, working in a bipartisan way. You know, you have a bond when you come in together, and the 13 of us, when you come in, like being a freshman in college, you have a bond, and we got to know each other personally. Our spouses get to know each other. We have briefings together. And so I've built relationships with those Republicans, and already I've passed bills with them. We just recently did a remanufactured parts bill with a Republican from Oklahoma. I worked with a Republican from Louisiana on some human trafficking legislation that I worked on, and it's now signed into law by President Obama. So I've introduced a number of pieces of legislation, and it's about moving beyond partisanship and just trying to find what we have in common. And when you get to know people on a personal level, you find there's a lot that we have in common. Let's get things done. That's what the American people want us to do. And that gives me an opportunity to build those kinds of relationships to make that happen.
I actually like that HuffPo piece. Had a quote from Colorado GOP Senator Cory Gardner. He said, we talk to him. We include him. He's not picked last on the Senate basketball team. But you
Thank God. I wouldn't want to be that last.
There you go. And you did tell us right from the beginning that was your intention is I'm going to make the most of this, and we are going to, come to know each other as people who care.
And that's absolutely right. And it's working, and I've been able to build those relationships and pass laws. Here I've been there, I guess I'm in the seventh month now.
Yes.
And I've already had two pieces of legislation of mine pass out of the Senate, one signed into law, and that was working with a Republican colleague of mine, freshman that I've gotten to know. And so that's how the place is supposed to work. Now, we have some very contentious issues that sometimes difficult to find the common ground. But if you start building those kinds of relationships early with some of these other builds that aren't so contentious, then that builds a relationship of trust that you hope will translate into dealing with the real tough issues that we're going to have to deal with. And I've always been committed about, finding that common ground. Certainly, I have strong principles that I care very deeply about, but you can still find common ground to get things done. And if we're not getting things done in Congress, we have big problems as a country.
U.S. Senator Gary Peters, Democrat from Bloomfield Township. Thank you so much for being with us today on Stateside.
Cynthia, always a pleasure. I look forward to being in person again soon.
Thank you.